Hello and welcome to an Access Baseball podcast. I'm your host, Vin Massana. We have not done a podcast recently. The main reason is because with COVID, we just haven't really felt, I haven't really felt that it was a good time to do in-person interviews at facilities, which is what I really like to do. I'd rather do the in-person interviews. Last year we did at the Green Turtle a bunch, at 365 Athletics, a few other places. East End Aviators play. So hopefully later in the fall, we'll resume that. Until then, I'll continue with the Instagram live interviews and things like that that don't need to be in person. But I wanted to hop on today just to kind of do a little State of the Union update now that the summer season is almost over. I mean, it's crazy how it seemed like we were waiting forever for baseball to start back up. It finally started on July 5th. And here we are almost 2 months later. I mean, it is a little depressing how quick it's going, because before we know it now, it's going to be the end of the fall. And then we have an off season again of inactivity and waiting for baseball. And hopefully we get a regular 2021 season. We'll find out about that. And I'll touch on that a little bit later. But first, I wanted to update people on some things that are happening and also talk about the big news for Met fans, the Steve Cohen era beginning very soon. So, but first I want to talk about, so the Boys of Summer playoffs is this week. We're going to have coverage on Wednesday of a couple games. Actually, tomorrow we'll cover one, and then Wednesday night, one of the finals. Haven't decided which age group yet, but they're all at baseball heaven. So I'll be bouncing around and see what is the best matchup. So that is going to be this week. Right after that, we Labor Day this weekend. Almost forgot about that. So East Coast, one of our good partners, East Coast Youth Baseball, definitely one of the best leagues out there. We're going to be covering their Labor Day tournament this weekend. That's going to be Friday through Monday, so I'll be there, you know, Plain Edge Park, Allen Park, bouncing around. Try to do one game Friday, and then the plan is to do two Saturday, two Sunday, and two Monday. So I'll be spending a lot of my weekend at the field. Nothing wrong with that, of course. I'd rather be there, honestly. And then before that, let's see, Thursday will be the Blue Chip Showcase. That's going to be at Medford. That's going to be crazy. There's over 100 players in that showcase. I will be covering that, doing some interviews, some live updates on top players, top performers there. And then I'll do a recap with the top 10 performers. Might need to be more than 10, actually, maybe 15 or 20, considering the amount of players that are going to be there. So that will be on Thursday. So this will be a busy week. Wednesday, Boys of Summer. Thursday, Showcase. Friday through Monday will be the Labor Day. That will bring us right into the fall coverage. Boys of Summer is going to have a fall league with college age, 18U all the way down to, I think, 13U. So I'll cover that. And then, of course, East Coast we'll be covering that as well, you know, the 8 to 12U on the weekends, most likely. I've basically been doing that weekends, the younger guys, and then during the week, older kids. And then East Coast, of course, does their big Columbus Day tournament, which the championship games are at Duck Stadium, which you gotta hang out there. That is a great day of baseball. It's got championship games from 9 a.m. all the way up till dusk. And that is Columbus Day, so a little over a month away, which will be right after my wedding. So I'll be on my honeymoon the first week of October, come back, cover the Columbus Day tournament. And then baseball will probably end around the last week of October, first week of November. I think the Boys of Summer Championship is November 1st, I saw. So that will be the end of the 2020 season, unfortunately. It came and went pretty quick, but we'll make the most out of it. There's still 6 weeks to go, so I don't want to 8 weeks to go, September and October, 8 weeks to go. I don't want to wish it away. Still a lot of coverage to be had, a lot of games to be played, a ton of 2021 uncommitted. Today we just saw John Rizzo commit to Adelphi, which is a huge pickup. I saw him at our tournament last month. I mean, the kid is phenomenal. He's really a borderline Division I arm, so no surprise Adelphi got another top arm. Rizzo is on the junior ducks. He plays at East Islip. Just phenomenal pitcher, 85, 86, 87, you know, great command. I mean, he's a kid you want to go to battle with, honestly. So credit to Coach Scala and Bill and their staff over there at Adelphi. I know they're always building a strong pitching staff, and I don't expect that to end anytime soon. So that's what's happening with baseball, with local baseball at least. So I wanted to talk about the Steve Cohen thing. I mean, it's huge news. Most of you guys, if you're listening, you probably know I grew up a Met fan, diehard. Now I work for the Padres, so it's a little bit different. My priorities have shifted, but look, it's no secret. The Wilpons were awful. They were probably the worst owners in sports, and when you have a bad ownership group, you have a bad franchise. That's what it comes down to. I think a lot of maybe younger fans or misinformed fans don't understand that. They kind of confuse it to be, they perceive it to be a Mets issue. It's not like the New York Mets is cursed. I mean, they won a World Series in 1969. They won a World Series in 1986. They went to a World Series in 2000. They probably should have went in 1999. They probably should have went in 1988. You know, they've built great teams before. And really the common denominator in their struggles since 2001 has been the Wilpons. Since they took over, they bought out Nelson Doubleday in 2002. They've been the majority shareholder since then. They have made the playoffs. Since taking over, they made it in 2006, they made it in 2015, and they made it in 2016. That's it. Now, you can say that they should have made it, you know, if there was a second wild card in 2007 and 2008. Regardless, they did not. And more often than not, they've had embarrassingly bad teams, and they've had embarrassing PR nightmares, and just that all stems from the ownership group. I mean, the whole LOL Mets thing, it's for a reason. And what happens is when you have a bad ownership group, then you don't hire the right people because you meddle in the day-to-day operations. And good baseball people like Chaim Bloom, who they probably should have hired before the 2019 season, they turn you down. They don't want to work for you. So you end up having to hire people like Brody Van Wagenen, who was an agent, and he really was not qualified to be a general manager. Good teams, they have a president of baseball operations. They have a general manager. Usually the general manager is somebody that has worked in every aspect of the front office and baseball department and moved their way up. Chaim Bloom is a perfect example. He's a guy that started at 21 years old as an intern, worked his way up, knows the system inside and out, and turned the Rays into a winner, a powerhouse of a minor league team. I mean, minor league system. And the Red Sox, they got the guy that they should have, that they wanted, and rightfully so. You know, they're a good franchise. They've won four World Series since 2004. Whereas the Mets, they wanted him, and I mean, I don't know the full story, but they did not hire him. And Brody Van Wagenen, you can say, all right, he's an outside the box thinker or he's charismatic, but I mean, I disagree. I think the guy is in over his head. He's traded. He's mortgaged the future. He's made awful trades. The most notable one, obviously, is trading away Jared Kelenic and taking on the Robinson Cano contract. But, you know, it's even the smaller stuff. You look at Blake Taylor for Jake Marisnick. It's just, it doesn't make sense. You don't trade prospects for fourth outfielders, and he's done it three times. You don't trade two prospects for a rental. You don't sign guys that are impending free agents that are about to get cut and trade prospects for them. He just continuously does it. He did it today again, trading Kevin Smith, who is a potential back end starter of the rotation, and he trades him for a backup catcher and for Todd Frazier, who there's no spot on the team unless JD Davis goes on the deal. There's literally no reason to have Todd Frazier. He was old last year. He's older now. You know, you can say that he offers a right-handed power, but I mean, that's what JD Davis is. So I don't get it. I don't think he's a good GM, and I think his days are numbered, which segues me into the next part of the conversation. If you're not familiar with Steve Cohen, I urge you, watch Billions and read Black Edge. I mean, a lot of teams have money and a lot of teams are motivated to win, but I don't know how many owners or general managers have hit number one best-selling books written about them. I don't know how many owners have a show on HBO prefaced about them. I mean, Billions is a phenomenal show. I liked it before I even heard of the word Steve Cohen, the name Steve Cohen. And Black Edge is phenomenal. I mean, if you're not familiar, definitely watch it. But I mean, the long story short is that the guy's from Great Neck. He grew up in a middle-class family, you know. Great Neck obviously is wealthy now, but it wasn't always. And, you know, he came from humble beginnings and got himself through UPenn, which is one of the best schools in the country. More specifically, their Wharton School of Business, which is the number one business school in the world. And he went there. He got into finance, and he's 64 years old. He is considered to be the greatest trader of the generation. He's amassed a wealth of $14 billion, and he's ruthless. I mean, for every Yankee fan that I've seen on Twitter that has diminished his accomplishments and said that it's not just about spending money, I mean, you really are missing the point. It's not about that. I mean, yeah, the money helps. It definitely helps to have three times the amount of money as the next richest team. If you look at the list, you know, the San Francisco Giants owner is worth about $5 billion or a little bit less, right around there. You know, the Steinbrenners are in the $3 or $4 billion range, which is a ton of money. And Steve Cohen has $14 billion. Steve Cohen made $1 billion last year. Steve Cohen made $900 million in 2006. Steve Cohen made money off of the recession in 2008. He's making money this year. He's, you know, made hundreds of millions of dollars this year alone. The guy is brilliant. He's ruthless. He's smart. He's analytical. And he stays out of the press. I mean, if you would ask people, what would you want your owner to be? You'd probably want him to be, number one, wealthy. He checks off that box. You'd probably want him to be very smart and analytical, which he is. And you'd probably want him to be a fan of the team, which is a distant third, I would say, because that really is not a prerequisite to owning the team. You don't have to have grown up rooting for the team, but I would say it doesn't hurt, you know. And if you had to make a list of the people that fit that qualification, oh, and we'll add that he's from Long Island, that doesn't hurt. So how many people are worth over $1 billion are considered to be the best trader in stock market history, grew up a Mets fan, and live on Long Island, which he lives in Great Neck and he lives in East Hampton. I'm sure he has a couple other houses, but those are his offices for SAC, which is his firm or his old firm. There's probably about, I don't know, one person in the world that fits that qualification. It just happened to be that not only was he interested in it, but that he was not going to be denied. I mean, if you follow the story, he tried to buy the team on December 4th. It came out of nowhere. That report came out. I think Ken Rosenthal or John Heyman had tweeted that they were in whatever preliminary agreement. Everybody went crazy. This is great news. 2 months later, it falls through, and he releases one of his few press release statements that says he looks forward to seeing a higher bid as an 8% owner of the team, which he is. He's 8% owner, which he paid $40 million for it. And now he's paying about $2 billion for the rest of the team. So also it worked out. Under the original agreement, he wasn't going to be in charge making the decisions for 5 years, at which point he would be 69 years old. Who knows what his physical health would be in, his mental state, whatever. I mean, nobody wants to wait 5 years to be in control of something that you spent $2 billion on. So I definitely thought that was nonsensical. Just a typical Jeff Wilpon thing to do, to say, hey, I'll take your money, but you still have to answer to me, which is complete and utter nonsense. So he was lucky enough that once Allen and Company stepped in and oversaw the merger and acquisition, that they got rid of that stupid rule. So he's going to be in charge. Friday night, that news came out. It was funny because I was following along during the whole process, and we all thought it was going to come out today, the 31st, which is when the final bid was due. And then it came out at about 9:30 at night or so. A reporter from CNBC saying that he was in exclusive talks to acquire the team, which now is the next step. So that tells me that he offered far and away more money. I mean, for the people that thought that A-Rod had a chance, I mean, give me a break. A-Rod is worth, you know, $300-400 million. J-Lo, great career, great person, I'm sure, very talented, but we're talking about a different stratosphere of wealth. Steve Cohen doesn't have ball player money. Steve Cohen has more money than God. Steve Cohen can buy, you know, half of the teams probably tomorrow in Major League Baseball and still be a billionaire. He's in a different stratosphere. He can write it in a check in cash. You know, he might take out or finance it just because of the low interest rates. But the guy is a shark, and he's somebody that you want running your team. And I know people are concerned about how he made his money. You know, hedge fund guys, yada, yada. He had to pay the fine of $1.8 billion to the SEC. And I say, look, how many people out there are billionaires, and how many of those people made it, you know, by selling Girl Scout cookies? It just doesn't happen. These are ruthless individuals, and that's the way America works, unfortunately. The guys that at the top, they're ruthless. You know, Jeff Bezos, they don't care. This guy made $13 billion this year off of a pandemic, Jeff Bezos. So he's not going to apologize for that. He's got more money than, you know, more money than certain countries do. These guys are just, they're wired a different way. You know, they're self-motivated. They're not satisfied with anything. So, you know, give me the guy like Steve Cohen. I don't need a fraud like Alex Rodriguez, who's going to cobble together, you know, a bunch of investors to put together the money, and then they wouldn't be able to operate the team. They just wouldn't win. And in my estimation, I think that the Wilpons wanted to sell to him because they know that he was going to probably embarrass himself and not win. And they would rather that than to see the franchise flourish after they're gone. So from a Met fan's perspective, I think you guys should be doing jumping jacks. The guy is going to stop at nothing to build a winning team. And as I mentioned, in terms of the amount of money that you spend on the team, I think that's just one aspect of it. You know, Met fans have been so accustomed over the last, let's say, 11 years of settling for those secondary and tertiary free agents. You know, the Jason Bays of the world, of course, that's the one that comes to mind. But I mean, it's the Michael Kadires, it's, you know, it's the JJ Putzes of the world, it's Frank Francisco, it's getting the second and third best guys on the market. Not even the second best, like the second tier, the third tier, not the second best player. I would love to have the second best player, because that would probably be an impact guy. And so it's just one of the many reasons why he's going to be successful. I think the Mets are going to shop in that upper tier of free agents every single year. You know, when it comes to this offseason, for example, JT Realmuto is the guy. You know, you're going to get a 30-year-old catcher that has a proven track record. Even if his skills diminish a little bit, I would be comfortable paying a guy like that, because I think he's still going to be a top-tier catcher. That's the kind of guy that you want to spend on. You know, under the Wilpons, that's not even an option. There's no $100 million contracts. And then the other thing is paying your own guys. I mean, look at – it took them – the fans had to beg for them to open their wallet for Jacob deGrom, you know, the two-time Cy Young Award winner. And the guy has been criminally underpaid. The guy has gotten no run support. He's gotten the worst luck with the bullpen, blowing the leads, and he keeps his mouth shut and he pitches, and he's still underpaid, even with his $137 million contract. They got burned with Cespedes, they got burned with Wright, and they got burned with those two are the main ones. And then you get a good contract with DeGrom, so they lucked out with that. But so they never want to open their wallets, because the two times that they did for a homegrown guy, the first two times, it just backfired in their face. So you want to have an owner that tries to pinpoint the young homegrown players and rewards them. You know, Michael Conforto's of the world. You know, I think that Pete Alonso will eventually be there. McNeil. You want to reward guys for doing the right thing, for coming up in New York. It's not an easy place to play. So, I mean, I think when Cohen is in charge, he's going to take care of the players that you need to take care of. You don't need to see Michael Conforto going to the Phillies, you know, like Zach Wheeler. That was awful. This guy is was a capable pitcher. Yeah, granted, he had his hiccups, you know, in big spots. I think he had the Tommy John surgery, which happens to half the pitchers in Major League Baseball, so you can't hold that against him. But he was worth re-signing. And it's one thing if you're going to let a guy like that go and you're going to replace him with a homegrown stud that was vying for a spot in the rotation. You can't replace Zach Wheeler with Rick Porcello and Michael Wacha. It's not good enough. It's not good enough, and it sends a sign to the fans that you just don't value your own homegrown players and that you can't afford them. So I think that when you have a guy in charge that is willing to spend, he's going to do it. And if it doesn't work out, it's not going to scar him from doing it again in the future. I think that's so critical, because let's just say hypothetically that they were to give, who's a good example, Jeff McNeil, a contract of 5 years and $110 million. If he breaks his leg and is never the same, you don't want your owner to say, well, we're not going to ever write a contract like that again. You need a guy that is going to be willing to take that risk again and not miss out on, you know, the next Hall of Fame talent. That's just, I think that's a prerequisite. So those are the two biggest things, obviously, is the free agency from the outside and then keep maintaining your homegrown talent. And those are the two things that Cohen is going to do with anybody in the league. Think Yankees, think Dodgers, think Phillies. And then the other thing is the infrastructure of the organization. The Wilpons notoriously were opposed to hiring an analytical department, and now they have a decent one, but they only have 5 full-time guys. It's one of the smallest in the league. I think Cohen is going to run it like a hedge fund. He is one of the most analytical guys, and I'm not talking about analytical as in pinching pennies. I'm talking about, you know, making data-driven decisions and hiring the right people. I think that is crucial too. For the last 10 years, Jeff Wilpon essentially has been the GM of the team too, which you don't want. You don't want your owner writing out lineup cards and pulling strings at the trade deadline for trades and forcing injured players to play. You want a guy that is going to hire the right people, get out of the way if they have to, know what they don't know what they do know, be self-aware. You know, if you have a guy like, you know, a Dave Dombrowski or a Brian Cashman making the decisions, trust them because you're paying them good money. I think that if Theo Epstein ever wants a new career change, maybe he says, hey, let me go to Flushing and try to turn around another organization. I wouldn't put that out of the realm. I think it's very important to have a robust analytical department because you're going to be able to pinpoint players in the draft and free agency that are undervalued. You know, think a Jacob deGrom getting drafted in the 10th round. By having a good scouting department, you're going to find guys like that. You know, that's what the Dodgers have done. That's why they were able to maintain losing Hyunjin Ryu and Rich Hill and Kenta Maeda in the same offseason. And they haven't missed a beat and have the best record in the National League because they have a constant pipeline of pitchers because of how they analyze minor leaguers and free agents. That's the other aspect. And then the third thing is the international scouting. That's huge. I mean, look at the National League East. You have Ronald Acuna and you have Juan Soto. Those are two of the best players in baseball, and the Mets have to see them for the next 10 plus years. And the Mets have not done a great job in terms of that. You know, Ahmed Rosario was considered the top prospect in baseball. I don't think he has flourished. I don't think he is a top shortstop in baseball. The jury's out on whether he will become one, but at the moment he's not. Andreas Giménez, like what I see so far, but again, he's not Ronald Acuna. He's not Juan Soto. Soto is a generational player. His contemporaries through age 21 are like Melot, Jimmy Fox, Alex Rodriguez, you know, Bryce Harper, the best players that we've seen Major League Baseball. So the Mets need to pinpoint their targets in international free agency as well. I mean, baseball is a hotbed in Dominican Republic, Venezuela, and Puerto Rico. They have to be able to get these guys. I'm sorry, Puerto Rico, those players are eligible in the MLB draft. But all the other Latin American countries, they need to do a better job there. And I think Cohen will do that. I think he is the one guy that could turn around a franchise like this. The guy has the money. He has the smarts. He's ruthless, and he's not going to bow down to the Yankees. I'll tell you that. I'm not saying the Mets are going to win 20 World Series in the next 100 years. I'm saying that they're going to be perennial contenders for the first time since 1986. And, you know, from 1985 to 1988, I think they'll have a sustained run. And I think he's going to invest in the ways that you should. You know, even if they made a hard salary cap of $180 million, he'll be right at that cusp every year. And he'll pour money into the international free agents. And he'll pour money into the scouting department. And he'll pour money into the front office, because this guy can. He can lose half of his money tomorrow and be, you know, among the top 100 people in the world. So I think that Met fans should be happy. This is a once-in-a-generation type thing. New York teams do not go up for sale very often. It's the first time since 1980. It's just, it's a rare thing. And that's why I was so invested in this story, because I was curious to see if it was going to be him, A-Rod, or some dark horse candidate. So I think Met fans should be really happy. You know, they're going to put the ink on the paper soon, and then he's going to get voted on in November at the winter meetings, the GM meetings rather, which I think he will have no issue, because by him being in charge and the team getting valued at $2.5 billion, that just made every other organization more valuable. So that's what these owners care about first and foremost. So there might be one guy like a Jerry Reinsdorf that has a axe to grind with him. That's fine. It's not going to be everybody, though. And I think by free agency, by the early in the free agency, the Mets will have their guy in charge.